Hey everybody, this is Stu Smith with another Tactical Fitness Report, and today we're going to mix a little bit of the mind and the body discussion today, and I have a special guest with me, Anna O'Connor, and just found out she's local here in Severna Park, Maryland, right, or close to us, right?
I am, Severna Park.
Yeah, so anyway, I've never met you face-to-face, but you know, we had some mutual friends that put us together, and we're just going to talk a little bit about mental toughness, some resiliency, you know, and the journey that you make as maybe a young high school kid, in sports, and maybe you're going into D1 athletics in college, or maybe you're going to enlist and join the military or become police officer or firefighter, whatever those jobs are in the tactical professions, or if you're going to go push that a little bit down the road till later. I want to talk a little bit about that journey. And Anna works for a company called Brain Savvy.
Actually, I'm the co-founder.
I'm sorry, yeah, when I say
that's
that.
Okay.
I was about to say co-founder.
That's okay.
Co-founder of Brain Savvy, brainsavvy.com.
Brainsavvytraining.com. It's a long one.
Brain Savvy. I'll put all the links to it in the description below. But I really was intrigued by what you do and by, you know, some of the athletes and some of the you know, corporate professionals that you deal with. And, you know, because life is stressful and we all deal with stress. It doesn't matter what that stress is, if it's I can't meet this deadline, I can't pay this bill at the end of the month, or I have bullets flying over my head. Hormonally speaking, it is the same stress.
And that's absolutely right. And thank you for having me.
Yes.
I've watched you for years and love what you do and how you connect with the young people. It's so important.
Cool.
And you're right. I think if anything, this time in history with the pandemic, as my kids say, I don't want to be a part of history anymore. I think that we've all learned that we depend on vices, and when they're stripped away, and we depend on routine, and when that routine is taken away, we feel even more stressed.
Yeah, it is stressful. Change is stressful.
We've been, yes, and that makes perfect sense. Everything I do is about the brain, and I'll be talking about how everything really makes sense when you bring it to the brain. And what that does, I think, for us people is it kind of makes us not so judgmental on ourselves or others, because it's just the way the brain works.
Right.
You know, it's not you, it's your brain. So like you said, change is hard. Why is change hard? Because your brain, there's three rules with the brain we always teach everyone, is number one, its first job is to keep you safe.
Yep.
And it's always looking, safe or unsafe, safe or unsafe. Second thing is your brain likes what it knows, even if it's not good for you and you don't want it. If you've been doing it and it's a habit, it's going to keep doing it because your brain is lazy and it doesn't want to exert the extra energy to change.
Right. And because there's a lot of processes that occur in the brain when you make change.
Yes.
You're trying to create a new habit. I mean, what is happening in the brain when you do that? And why is it just so easy for us to keep our old habits, but hard to build new habits?
Well, it starts with the amygdala. I mean, the third thing I was going to say is our brain resists change.
Right. There you go.
Because it can't predict it. It can't know what's going to happen with it. So that means, is it safe or unsafe? So it's going to take it as it might be unsafe if it's something new. Right.
Right.
So your brain goes down to that tiny little step of, okay, I'm not going to eat ice cream for, you know, dinner tonight. And you don't want to do that, and you know you shouldn't do that. However, it's become your habit of soothing yourself, basically.
Sure.
And so you know it. That's why the thinking brain, its job is to filter our emotions and our desires and that kind of thing to make them rational. However, when it's a habit and you've been practicing it for a long time, the emotional brain will take over and it'll just say, oh, well, and before you know it, you're doing it. And this is all unconscious. You have no idea why you keep reaching for that ice cream, but you do.
Right.
Same thing for if you overreact, like if you get triggered and you go from 0 to 10 really quick. That's what you've practiced. So that's what you do.
Right.
And until you know how to catch, we have the saying, we say, catch the stress, control it, then release your best. And it's that easy.
Okay.
And it's that hard.
All right. So let's break that down a little more. How do you catch your stress?
The most important thing somebody can do starting yesterday, right this second, is start just taking a deep breath as often as you can. We have an app. It's called the Brain Savvy app. And it's on, it's for Android or iOS. And in there we have, it's called a quick check. And we did the quick check because yoga and meditating is phenomenal. Absolutely. However, we felt like in the moment that stress is happening, when you're triggered, you're not going to, you know, strike a down dog.
Right. Yeah.
Or, you know, go down and start, you know, home or whatever. But I mean, it definitely helps because it is practice for your brain of getting into that calming state. So we decided that we would do just a 6-second deep breath, and it's a belly breath, and it is 6 seconds, and anybody can do 6 seconds, anybody.
Oh, sure.
And I was sharing it with some of the healthcare workers during this whole crisis and giving them ideas of when they could do it. And, you know, before you step into the hospital, on your way to the hospital, when you're walking from one room to the next, before you open the door, it's, and what that does, you're telling your brain to focus on your breath. That's consciousness.
Okay. I like it.
So that way the unconscious or autopilot, I call it, the autopilot isn't just steering you wherever it goes and you follow. So by just becoming more aware, I worked with one person just recently. I think I've had 2 sessions with them, and with our app reminding him through the day, he has, I mean, it's helped him exponentially. He had a lot of intrusive thoughts. Now he's doing this breath, he can start noticing them more because now his brain's saying, pay attention. When I take this breath, you're going to pay attention more. And then he'll hear the intrusive and he'll go, that's not true. I've got this.
That's a really good skill. You know, yes. Handling that and breathing, especially for obtrusive thoughts, because they come in, you can't control those things.
And that's the stories you tell yourself. And those are created, you know, most of our stories we tell ourselves, or we call them wires. Our brain is wired, has billions of wires. And these wires label everything in your limbic system, your emotional brain. And like, they label them based on your emotion to that thing, person, sure. Place. Beach. A beach is sand, water. However, if you have wonderful experiences at the beach is awesome. I love the beach. If you had a traumatic experience at the beach, I know someone who did, beach is bad.
Yeah, sure.
I don't like the
beach. It's not your happy place.
No. And that's wires, because the beach is just the beach, right. But it's what you connect it to. It's your perception. So it's really helping them to recognize what they're telling themselves, what they're being triggered by, and then interrupting that stress loop that goes and goes and goes. And every time you take that breath, it goes, pauses, then it'll start going again. And then the more you do, you're breaking it up. So it just doesn't get much of a rhythm going.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're so much more conscious.
Well, it seems like the catching it.
Yes.
Really relies on awareness, internal awareness, as well as external awareness.
And we call it connection.
Right.
Connected to yourself, connected to, you know, whatever you align with, and your environment is right. What you need to connect
to. Just let you know, in the military, we've always called that internal and external awareness.
Perfect.
So you have an external awareness of your situation, mm-hmm. how many people are around you, how many of them are carrying guns, how many mm-hmm. aren't, how many men, how many women, you know, where are the exits, where's the cover, concealment, you know, all these little things go through mm-hmm. your brain when you right. are in certain situations. And that is our external awareness. But something that a lot of people neglect is realizing that their heart rate just went up 15 beats per minute, or they realize that, you know, they got butterflies in their stomach, you know, or they fail to realize they have butterflies in their stomach, or just little things that are just those signs that can help you with understanding what's going on internally.
Yes. Well, and, you know, we believe that if you can't practice it everywhere, at home, at work, you know, in play or working out, it's going to not serve you well. And like the things that you just were talking about, I mean, that serves you well in life when you're not, you know, in combat. So the internal thing, I think, has been so hard for people to try to train. And now we have the functional MRIs so that we can see what happens in the brain.
They're impressive.
And that has changed everything. So now we can train our brain. I call it, you know, when you pull up your GPS, I thought of this yesterday, I was going somewhere, and it'll say routes, and you can pick which route you want to go. If I'm going somewhere and like driving to Virginia, I kind of know where to go. And I always go the same way, but I always route, you know, I always just pick the same route. Same thing with the way you respond to stress. Mm. You create this route that you always take. Your brain just goes right to that familiar wire because that's saving energy and it's a habit.
Mm. Yep.
And it's a brain habit, stress habit, and it just does it automatic. You're completely unaware of it. Like you drive home, you don't even remember it. What the catch is if you can just take a breath, tune into where you're holding your stress, and I always say, and I know you'll agree, your body never lies.
Mm, yeah.
And it tells you how you're feeling.
Right.
If you start learning to connect to it. And there's plenty of people that have never done that, and that's okay. They haven't known to.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I've made that such a habit. Personally, that, you know, breathing is
a habit. You probably did it young, right? You did it when you were young.
Breathing is a habit. And you, I mean, think about it in sports, whether you're shooting mm-hmm. a free throw, 1 second left in the game.
Yes.
Yep. What are those guys doing? They're taking big, deep breaths before they go.
They have a ritual. And that triggers the brain. Hey, we're doing a free throw. We're not defending. So
we've
just
done 1,000 of these.
Just automatic. And that's all it is. And that's a ritual, that's habits that cues the brain on what the performance needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Same thing for shooting. You know, we learn how to breathe and shoot and, you know, shoot in between heartbeats. I mean, all these little mm-hmm. things that, you know, require deep internal awareness. And then you can apply everything that you've learned, whether it's tactically or in athletics, into these resiliency stress mitigation techniques that you're mm-hmm. that you're teaching. One thing that I've noticed is that I do it so often that my wife will say, "What's wrong?" Like she'll know that I'm breathing deeply because there's something that is either annoying me or it's and it could be completely trivial. Doesn't have to be doesn't have to be a dramatic dramatic event. You know, it could just be someone's annoying me.
And I do the same thing.
Yeah. It's just mm-hmm. big, deep breath, big exhale. And I'm fine. I said, no, I'm good.
what it does is, that's how I explain it, is that deep breath, it slows down the emotional brain so that your thinking brain can get online.
Yes.
And reason.
And here's where it's really important for the tactical professional is there will be a moment in your career where everything is chaotic.
Right.
And you have to focus on emergency procedures. You have to focus on life-saving techniques for someone who's, you know, gravely injured, you know, and that requires that thinking part of the brain, and there's this little thing that catches in there that says, I just went back to my training. You know, after it's all done, you know, there's so many people have had these stories that like, I don't know what happened. I just went back to my training. Well, you went back to that thinking part of the brain, the repetition.
And the wire was there.
And the wire was there. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think of Sully, who landed the plane on the Hudson, Miracle on Hudson. He was able to do that because he flew planes and landed on the water like 25 years before.
Yeah, and gliders. He did gliders and water planes. Yeah.
Yes, he did. So he had some sort of, you know, grasp to what he needed to do, and he went to it.
I love that, too. He was so calm. No, we're going to land in the Hudson.
Unbelievable.
completely
and so
chill.
You know that he was self-regulating. You know, his emotional brain was completely calm. It wasn't like, and he just did the job. And, you know, it doesn't mean you don't have any emotion. You don't get excited or, you know, sad. It means that it's appropriate to what's happening. And we have a great tool, and I'll send it to everybody that wants it. It's the reaction gauge. And it's basically a line, 0 to 10. And 0 is a non-event. And 10 is life or death. And I love doing it with phones.
Okay.
You know, what if you lost your phone? And it's adults and kids. It's adults and kids, man.
Yeah, you know.
And I say, what would it mean to you if you lost your phone? Where would it land on this reaction gauge? 0 to 10, 10 is life or death. 8.
9, wow, that's high.
7s.
I would probably say 5.
Most are 7s and up.
Yeah.
And then I always like to say, so we polled 1,000 people. What do you think 1,000 people would say? 0 is no event, 10 is life or death, and you lost your phone. 1,000 people. All of a sudden they're like, huh. Because the thinking brain came on board, they see life or death.
Yeah, a little bit deeper.
Okay, that's a little... And most life events are 4 or under.
Right.
So let's say for me, it'd be a 1. I mean, I can live.
Yeah, for me, it'd be 5 because I get a lot of business done on this thing.
That is true.
It's half my business. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet the tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's say it's a 3.
Yeah.
So if you're gauging that as a 9, your reaction is going to be a 9.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's everything stops in the world. I can't deal with this. And it causes you great grief and possibly a lot of other people agree. Yeah. However, if you can take that breath, get your thinking brain on board and reason and then problem solve.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you do.
Get your wife's phone. Do the old, you
say,
know, find your phone app.
Child.
find your phone app and see where that thing is. And if it's,
it could be replaced, you know, whatever. So, absolutely. I mean, that's always a fun one to do.
Yeah.
And I think, especially on teams, because what means so much to one person may not mean as much to another person.
Ah, there we go. Now we're talking some teamwork. Focus.
And that really brings people closer together when we do this.
I like that. Hey, before we move on to that, because I really want to touch on that, let's talk about the second phase that you had. We caught it. Now we control it. What are some of the controlling techniques? Because one thing I've worked with personally, as well as, you know, coaching physically, you know, because I kind of focus on the physical, right? I really kind of don't.
And it takes both.
I don't really mess with the mental, but I go so physical that it becomes mental.
Absolutely. Right?
And you have these obtrusive thoughts that come in. And I always tell people, don't listen to yourself, talk to yourself.
That's good. I like that.
Right. Yeah. And it's just one of those little quick things. Yeah. So you like, quit listening to yourself, because yourself is just going to tell you to stop running and catch your breath. Right. And, you know.
Absolutely.
So what do you do to control it?
So the control part is we have a lot of tools like the reaction gauge. I mean, you keep that in your mind's eye. I mean, sure. I told you once, you'll remember it forever.
Yeah.
And so keeping that in your mind's eye, that helps. First, you have to get conscious. Yeah. You know, you have to be aware. You can't fix something that you don't recognize.
Sure.
So if you could start recognizing, and you won't be perfect at the start, but you'll get better. And like you, we don't do quick fixes because they don't work. It's a progression and it takes time. I have found that younger people are able to reroute their wires and respond better quicker.
So they can actually build habits quicker?
Yes.
And can they break habits quicker? I guess they could since they're,
yes,
they're and not it, as big.
Habits are wires.
Yeah.
And I believe it's because they haven't practiced them as long.
Yeah, and think about the synapses that get built too.
Yes.
You know, some of those like some of those strong synapses are, you know, as thick as your finger.
Yes.
You know, going through your brain.
And I mean the ones probably most hardest to rewire are ones that are relational.
Yeah, sure.
Like I work with, you know, a lot of, you know, let's say perfectionists. And we call that wire, I'm all good or I'm all bad.
Hmm.
And that's perfectionism.
Okay.
If I have to do it perfectly. If I don't, then I'm all bad.
Right.
And so whenever you polarize anything, if you ever use the words never, always, then that's polarizing. And that's, you're not working from the best part of your brain. And because we make the brains three different colors to keep it simple. The thinking brain's blue, the yellow brain, the emotional brain is yellow, and then the reptilian brain is red. So if you're acting from the red brain and you absolutely need it, if it's a 911, you know, if someone's drowning, I'm going to run in the water and help them. I'm not, that's a reptilian instinct to do that.
Sure.
You don't think. And however, the reptilian brain can be misused too. And then the yellow brain, I call your working brain, is where you're trying to figure things out. You're not sure, you're problem solving. And most people, I think, live here the most. It's like their mindset because they're unsure. And so they're just inconsistent.
Okay.
And then if you have someone who can get to the blue almost on demand, then that's where you're going to be humble but confident. You're going to be able to see things for what they are and not skew them. And you're going to be able to pull your best performance out. I think ideally what we know is to be able to kind of have a small wave from the yellow brain, blue brain, and you don't have these polarizing responses.
Gotcha.
That's when it's a problem.
Hmm.
So it's, and that's regulating when
sure,
it's just a little wave. When you can, it's not ever going to be like this. We're human.
Right. Do you ever use HRV to?
No, we don't. And I work a lot with University of Maryland men's lacrosse team, and they do a lot with the mechanism that they have the guys wear, and I can't think of the name of it.
The Omega Wave?
Yes, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say yes for sure, but it's something that, you know, they wear, and to see how hard they worked.
Right.
And I don't think it takes necessarily their heart rate as much as it does how far they go, and then based on their intel that they give back of how sore they are and stuff.
Okay.
It would be great to do that because when you're walking into practice and you're stressed about this huge project that you have to get done tonight, your heart rate's going to be elevated.
Sure.
So I would love them to have that and get the heart rate information so that we can see how much stress is elevating the heart rate as much as the physical.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Study?
What's that?
That would be a great study, I think.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So we control it with a variety of
tools. Like of on tools. Our app, you do your check-in, your quick check where you take the breath. And the goal is everything you do, you want to have a goal, like an intention. You know, you just don't check, you know, do it for nothing.
You don't react for nothing. You actually have a...
You're getting data.
Outcome. Yeah.
Right. And so you do your deep breath and you want to know, am I blue, yellow, or red?
Okay.
And so on the app, it'll just flip right to, are you blue, yellow, or red? And it gives you you know, description, like three words to give you an idea of what you are. Say you're yellow, then it flips to the yellow tool. And the yellow tool is, I feel frustrated. And then the next line is, you can do it, I mean, less than a minute. I feel frustrated. I need to figure out what to do. I will make a phone call and find out what I have to do to get a new phone. I'm capable of doing that.
Right.
It's I feel, I need, I will, I am. And it gives you power.
Yeah, I like that.
To take control and problem solve.
Yeah, because you can't problem solve if you don't have that thinking part of your brain on.
And that's what it does.
You got to get out of that reptilian brain. Mm-hmm. Right. Which let's explain the reptilian brain for everybody, because the way I've learned it, it was the four F's.
Yes.
Reptilian brain is, and I always like this. This is always funny. It's food, fight, flight, and reproduction. So those are the four F's, right? That's pretty much what. Yeah.
You got me on that. I love it. I can't wait. I seem to coach all guys. They will love that.
Yeah. Boy, that's what the reptilian brain's all about, right? I mean, right. It is pure survival. Everything that you need to survive, not only as today, but as a species.
Yes.
That is what the reptilian brain is all about. And, you know, it has some positives to it, obviously. I mean, when stress is stress, it is, you know, sometimes you need to react from that part of the brain. But, you know, when it becomes more complex, as, you know, human situations tend to be, you have to control it, catch it, control it, breathe it down, and engage that thinking part of the brain. Otherwise, you're not going to get through that situation the way
you and even with the food and reproduction, you need to have the thinking brain somewhat engaged as well.
Well, yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Sure,
I mean,
absolutely.
About it. I mean, all of it needs, you need all of them.
Yeah.
You know, one isn't.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Them all. Yeah. And the red brain, where we go with that, like if you go on the app, it flips and you say you're red, it flips to red and it says nothing can be said in red because they're not going to, you know, you're not going to know what you're saying. And if they're red, you're not going to hear it. So just don't say anything.
Yeah. That's good.
And this too will pass, because when you go to that reptilian brain, because the amygdala and the cortisol and everything is firing and that epinephrine, and your brain goes to this place of this will never end. I'm always going to be feeling like this. I had a kid that was really struggling with being homesick, and he was red, and he just felt like I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to feel better. And you could just see it. And what we know is that emotions have a lifespan. I mean, something good happens, you don't ride on that the rest of your life. Actually, the negative things that happen, they stick around longer because we're wired for threat.
Well, yeah, and we tend to replay it because we don't want to go through that situation again. Absolutely. And that's where those obtrusive thoughts come in. That's when, you know, they are called flashbacks, perhaps.
Yeah.
And I want to just share this with people, is that you're not crazy that you have flashbacks. That is a survival mechanism that is trying to, like something triggered that obtrusive thought. Right? Because you're unconsciously, you don't realize it. Something triggered that unconscious thought. And now it's trying to protect you from that same situation that you were once in, you know, that was traumatic to you. And so you're not crazy because you have a flashback. It is a survival skill.
And it is. I mean, you have a wire in there that was from that traumatic event that you were part of. And, you know, let's say you were in a traumatic motorcycle accident, and then you're riding down the road and you see a motorcycle accident, and all of a sudden you become like panicked and
you're there.
Awful feeling. Yeah. And you're like, what the heck? Why did I do that? because motorcycle accident goes to that wire. Your brain's going to look for the most familiar wire to whatever's happening and grab it. If you're conscious enough,
yeah,
you can see, oh, that is then, that was then, this is now. It also, you know, I feel like we replay things like that sometimes too, to help normalize it and desensitize ourselves. You know,
okay.
That's right. Like a plan, we call that planned exposures, and that's a proactive way of getting people to be able to face really hard situations and experience them so that they're not completely ignorant to it or unknowing, but they've been practicing what those emotions will be when they see this. And that way it's like their brain doesn't just blow up. They're like, okay, I've practiced this. So working with somebody, she wants to have a hard conversation with her family, but she is, her wire is, I don't matter. There's like three wires. I don't matter. I'm not good enough, which is the perfectionism, and I have no power. And so she is worried about, she's like, well, I'm going to go, and next time they do this, then I'm going to speak up and blah, blah, blah. She will not do it.
You
can't think you're going to do it. When you get in there and the emotions are going and everybody's doing their thing, she's just going to go back to her old habit until you practice. Just like what you do.
Yeah.
It's muscle memory.
Sure. Yeah.
This is a big, if you think about it, this is a big muscle.
Oh, it's, yeah, basically. Absolutely.
And, you know, where the body goes, the mind goes. Where the mind goes, the body goes. And unfortunately, for far too long, they've been separate. But I think, you know, doing these kinds of things where, you know, you focus on that because you can't do everything.
Yeah, sure.
And I focus on this, and then you have like-minded people that get it. And it makes all the sense. I mean, it changes everything. And so now she's practicing feeling that discomfort, which is one of the things that people want to avoid all the time. And I say, just face the bully. The bully is discomfort. Endure it. It will fade. Trust me. And I put them in these emotional states that they feel really uncomfortable and bring them up. And then they work through them in real time.
Nice.
And I think that's probably the biggest difference of what I do compared to a lot of other, you know, approaches.
Have you ever tried the name it and tame it approach?
Yes. And I totally love that. Name it and tame it, because your brain likes answers.
Right.
You know, it will keep working. That's the spin.
Yeah.
When you won't problem solve and you just find safety in worrying and being anxious. If you name it, your brain will go, oh, that's what, you know, it gives it an answer. And it'll even take the wrong answer.
Yeah, it will. It takes silliness. It'll take absolute. I kind of use it as a filing cabinet.
That's great.
Right? And, you know, and I name it and I say it, that goes in that file. Mm-hmm. Right. And,
oh, I like that. I like that for the different wires. Cause a lot of times what people find is like most of your wires of how you're going to respond to life are developed by the time you're four. And of course you get a lot from your parents, and, you know, whether it's, I don't matter, which means, you know, I'm insignificant, I'm dismissed, whatever. And then the perfectionism, and then, or I'm all good, I'm all bad. And perfectionism has the other side of I'm a loser. And, you know, so they just, it's the polar.
That kind of goes like with my recent article, the overconfident, underconfident spectrum.
Yes, I love that. Exactly. Yeah. It's in the middle. And that's what's so hard for us is, and it's, I mean, not to go off topic.
Yeah.
Just like with racism today, you know, people are polarized. They think all blacks are bad or all police are bad. It's neither of those.
Oh, sure.
It's in the middle. We're all people. There's, everybody has some good, you know, everybody, no one is all good and no one is all bad.
Right. And yeah, we're definitely polarized right now.
Yeah, I know. And it's so sad.
I don't think social media is helping. Yeah, because everybody is,
you know, sharing, what I'm saying?
Share their opinion and other opinions. And it's just,
I
just had a big rant.
Positivity.
The other day. Yes, I agree.
And we're all human.
Gotta stay positive. Okay, so there was a third section part of that brain. That's the release. The release,
and
yeah.
And back to the red brain is, so nothing can be said. This too will pass. And when you are feeling that red come on or you're in it, this is where the body and the brain are just powerful together, is release. It's extra emotion, extra energy. That's what stress is. Stress is emotion and what you're tagging it. Like speaking in public.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I'm great with it. It's blue. Yeah. My husband, red.
Yeah, I mean, it's stressful. I mean, I have to literally bring myself down before those events, because there is an adrenaline rush that hits me typically.
And
I know it.
Too much or too low.
Yeah, I call it the pregame jitters.
Yes,
so exactly. It's my name it and tame it approach.
That's perfect.
You know, pregame jitters and a couple big deep breaths, I'm ready to roll.
Right. And then once you get up there, you're in it.
Yeah.
And you're great. So with that, we say you need to release that extra energy. So you know how they say time cures everything? Sure. And it does, because emotions fade, right?
Sure.
And when you have all that extra energy or emotion, stress, move your body.
Yeah.
Give it a release. You know, allow it to have somewhere to go.
Right.
That's why exercise is awesome.
Well, exercise on the release is huge. However, I will say this. There are different types of exercises that are best for this release. Because the last thing you want to do is, if it was a really traumatic, highly stressful day, the last thing you want to do is just go nuts on a highly stressful workout that just puts you on the high stress physical spectrum as well. Because you're going to be, you know, engaging that sympathetic nervous system more. Whereas what you need to do is bring it down a notch.
Self-care.
And then focus on the parasympathetic nervous system and just breathe. So you do some easy cardio, you do some yoga, you do some stretching, you know, you go for a run.
Listen to music.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that. And, you know, and that is a better release when it's crazy stress that you're trying to release. It's just an average day, not that big a deal. You can go nuts and, you know, fight or flight it out and just kind of, and let the body metabolize that stress the way it normally does, the way that we as the human species metabolize stress. I love that. Naturally.
Metabolize it. That's great language. And you're exactly right. With our platform, we have two batteries, the emotional energy, which what we've been talking about, and then we have the physical energy side. And, you know, depending on, you know, what you want to call it, we call it physical habits, your physical habits or self-care. Like if I have a really tough session with someone it's really emotional and they're drained, I say you need to take care of yourself. You know, be really gentle with yourself, go for a nice walk, that kind of thing. And when you are taking care of the six health habits that we call them, sun, sleep, water, fuel, movement, and connection.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Cool. And it's so easy. And it's based on, and we made it like how many dots you got.
Yeah.
So there's six, and the goal is to have five or six dots.
Okay. So sleep, sun.
Hydration.
Okay. Water. Good.
Fuel.
Oh, food.
Movement.
Okay.
And connection.
Nice.
And I like that. Most of the time people don't put that connection.
Yeah.
And the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
He makes the ball.
Yeah, that's his connection. Yeah.
He has connection with himself, but you need it with something else too. We're relational. That's the way we were designed.
Yeah, I found a walk with my dog at the end of the day
that is so true.
Yeah, very. You get 1-2 punch there.
And that is. And you're
parasympathetic movement.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're outside.
And you're outside. Sun. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So we find that what happens with that, it helps with your decision making, and it actually matches up with executive function. Mm. Being able to see what's going on and hold the stress that you have around it and the stress that other people bring to it. Then weighing your options, and then trying to choose which one is going to work best, and then executing your decision.
That's really good, because all six of those are really great for helping you release that stress
and
as well.
The typical person, like, you know, special ops, I would believe they want to make, well, this is a great thing I want to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. So special ops, like when they go to BUDS, they're taking all their dots away. Mm-hmm. They get them outside for sure.
Yeah.
They're taking
plenty
away
of sun.
The most important one, which is number one, sleep.
Right. Yeah.
That's the key. I mean, you can do without the others for a bit, but sleep, oh my gosh, because that's the recovery.
Well, yeah.
Oh, and brain.
Yeah.
So there, I'm working with somebody that's going in. I said, these dots are going to save you. I said, because they're going to take them away, but they can't take away that sixth one.
Right.
Connection to self.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, they're encouraging you to bond and connect with your brother.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're your brothers. Yeah.
And that's how they do it.
Yeah.
So, you know you still have that, you'll persevere. You can take all the other stuff, but you're not taking that because you can't.
Yeah. They feed you well too.
Yeah.
They get plenty of food there.
And you're going to get water. You're going to get fuel.
Yep. Yep.
It's really the sleep that's just brutal.
Yeah. And I did a kind of a non-scientific Venn diagram the other day where half of the pie is just a pie chart. Half of the pie was sleep. Yet the other 40% was nutrition. And the missing 10% is all the stuff that people spend all their money on, right? Like massage and foam rolling and stretching and yoga, you know, all these little things like that, you know, that you, that's kind of like the missing 10%. But if you miss out on the sleep and the nutrition part of that, you're missing majority of your recovery.
Yeah, because your body needs the fuel.
Yeah.
And the right fuel. Right. I mean, the healthy fuel.
And there are some good food. How about, do you guys ever go into some of the foods that are suggested that can help you metabolize that stress, whether it's antioxidants? Yeah, think about it like as antioxidants,
right?
You know, with the free radicals that are post-stress created, right? And it can help you with that. So you got your vitamin E, vitamin C, beta carotene. All the antioxidants, amino acids, you know, in protein.
Did you write a book on this? Do you have a book on this?
I don't have a book on it, but I've just
read a book for you.
I've read a couple. I'm not a nutritionist, but I've read a couple that, you know, that are just help you. Once again, you know, the amino acids and proteins can help you metabolize those catabolic effects of stress.
Right. Right. Right.
Because that is what is happening, whether it's stress that is, you know,
doesn't matter
life, or is it stress that we've created because of hard physical workouts, we still have to recover from them.
Right.
You know, and the proteins, the amino acids, you know, healthy fats, you know, your, you know, omega-3s, all the healthy fats in there. And then, yeah, so you mix all that together with your water, and you know, you got a good formula for, you know, helping yourself
kind of rinsing out.
Yeah, helping yourself recover.
And soaking up the bad stuff.
Right, and it's not only recovery from today, it's preparation
for tomorrow.
And putting fuel in the tank for tomorrow.
And with our six physical energy dots, it's looking at the last 24 hours. What did you do?
Yeah.
You know, how much sleep did you get last night? Was it restful?
You know, that's a really good point. That's a really good way to do it. I never thought of
you
it.
Get my app.
You know, I have it. I got it on my phone. Because whenever I have somebody who either has one of the best days ever, let's say they hit 3 personal records, right? Or they have the worst day and they didn't come anywhere close to it. I usually ask them, what have you done in the last 24 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I never really thought about it as the six. But I always ask them, what'd they eat? How'd they sleep? You know, what'd you do yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as part of, you know, and so what I'm trying to do with that is create a system that they can now replicate day after day after day. And when they have those moments of all great performance, you know, they now have a system that leads to that performance, whether, you know, you got 2 days out before a big event,
right?
You can start doing what makes you most optimal. And it's going to be a little bit different for everybody, but similar.
And with the app, that's basically, I had a young man at the Maryland's team that is using my app. And the way we have it set up is like, if you have a group of people that you're working with or a team, you can get their data. And you can see, wow, they have three dots. Their mindset is yellow. They've done maybe two check-ins, quick check. Okay, so they're going to be working today. You know, they're not going to, you know, I'm going to have to really find a way to get them to the blue performance that I know they're capable of for where they are right now.
Right.
And for, you know, coaches, they're going to skew their practices around this, and it decreases injury and it decreases frustration. I mean, you have these kids walking in, you're like, what's wrong? What's wrong with her? What's wrong with them? And now you can look and see, wow, they didn't sleep. Yeah. And last year, two stories. One, I was getting their data and I noticed one young man wasn't eating and wasn't connecting with others. And he wasn't sleeping.
Whew.
Red flag.
Yeah, that's big.
That's a red flag. And he was struggling. And I was able to catch it before it kept spiraling. Because it's really hard for people to ask for help. One thing that we've done at Maryland, which I love, you know, Coach Tillman is amazing, the whole staff, is one of our goals was to make it a no stigma zone. That asking for help is the best thing ever. And so the way we went about it is that I am familiar with the team, like I'm part of the team. I come down there, I'm like their mom, you know.
Oh, fun.
I come down there and they're like proudest peacocks that I'm there to watch them practice. And I try to go once a week or once every other week. And then I'll do little, you know, quick mini trainings and connect with them on that way. And just walking up and down the sideline, having conversations. And then after practice, you know, I'll sit in the bleachers and they'll just come up one after another. And
that's fun. That's fun.
And they tell each other, just go talk to Anna. Just go talk to Anna. And that's the goal.
That's acceptance. That's good. When you get
there's no
buy-in like that. That's awesome. Yeah.
I know. And that's the way it should be, you know, because I forget who it's, you don't raise your children to not go to therapy. You raise them to ask for help.
Sure.
Whether it's, you know, a coach, a friend, therapy, medication, whatever, you know, the person needs. So that is a huge thing that my company is about, is lowering the, you know, just having a no stigma zone.
Oh, I love that.
For people. And the other thing is there was a kid on there that always had really, you know, high dots. Like he'd always have five or six of the physical energy. And I noticed he had like three one day. And then three again. I'm like, is he sick? So I checked on it. He goes, I've just been out of sorts. I got to get organized. And I said, so you know what to do, because with the app, with the dots, it asks you specific questions and they're yes or no.
Hmm.
So you know exactly what you missed. Like I did not drink enough. And our question there is your pee clear?
Yeah, that's easy.
I mean, that's the easiest way, because in winter, it's going to be a little bit different how much you need, or when you have a really hard practice, or it's hot. So is your pee clear? And you know, I've been around when I hear people say, oh my gosh, I was so dehydrated. And so it just gives you an answer. Like we said, the brain wants an answer. Tell me what to do, and I will do it. And it goes back to motivation. You know, are you motivated? And I was talking to a business owner yesterday, talking about having what is it that motivates you? And, you know, it goes to your purpose. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Purpose, your why.
Yeah, same thing.
Your willpower. Yeah.
This person, let's say, sells cars, and he loves doing it. However, you know, he wants to stay motivated and engaged. And I'm like, well, are you just selling a car? Because I know who he is. I know he's about people and connecting with people and making a difference in their day. And I said, no, you're selling them an automobile that's going to keep them safe, get them where they need to go, help their family.
Freedom.
Help them freedom.
Selling freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about whatever they're doing. Like if they're going into, they want to go into special ops, what is the purpose behind it? What is
gotta
the
have a why
set on this earth to do? For me, my purpose is to spread the good news and to do it through this, that there is hope. You don't have to stay stressed out. You don't have to live in the past. Mm. You don't have to bring the past up to right now and then worry about the future right now. You can just be right now and have the life that you really were designed to have, because people are just tangled up and they don't realize it, that there is actual way to use tools to rewire, reroute those old ways of doing things.
Yeah, I've always said, you know, your motivation is great, right? We're all motivated at some point. We see something that resonates with us and it inspires us, and that is our now, that's what we want to do, right? And then when you're this motivated, it's the perfect time to start building those habits.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect time to start training, to start learning, to whatever you have to do, you know, working your way up the ladder, you know, whatever that is in your life, sports, business, you know, spec ops preparation. You know, you have to start doing all those habits, right? Because there's going to be a day when you're tired. There's going to be a day when you're not really motivated, right? And you got to rely on your discipline, because your motivation's going to evolve into discipline. And then that is when it all starts coming together with creating mental toughness and resilience.
Exactly.
Because you don't get resilience by, you know, taking an hour class or by reading a book. You get it by practicing
consistent
every day
over a long period of time
and building those habits, yep. Even getting rid of bad habits.
Yes.
You know, it's I always say that every goal or every success is usually achieved by two habits, one that you start and one that you quit.
Oh, I love that. That's a good quotable.
Like that? It's not mine, but it's not mine. I've read it somewhere, but it's so true. I mean, it's.
I love that.
Yeah.
And you know, with the young people, a lot of times they're like, I don't know what my purpose is. And I go, great. You don't have to know what it is for the rest of your life.
No, it may change three times.
Right now. And you know, with the young men going in to, you know, go into special ops, you know, what is your purpose? What do you feel like your purpose is on this earth? And say there's no special ops, just what is your purpose? Because you have to have that when you are, I mean, I have to have it because I have kids, I have things going on all the time, just like everybody, I'm no different. Sure. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, I need to do this. And I'm like, I need to help people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Stay focused. Yeah. Stay focused on your purpose, because you can't, it's real easy when the days get long, when, you know, the days turn into night, you're wet,
and
you're sandy.
Wears off.
Yeah. You're wet, you're sandy, you're cold, you're tired, something hurts on you. You have chafing everywhere, and, you know, and you're alone with your own thoughts. You know, at that moment, you really have to remember your why, because what's that brain trying to do to you at that moment? It's saying, what are you doing? This is
you're
ridiculous.
Not safe. You're uncomfortable.
You are very unsafe right now.
Yes.
Right. And the brain is built for you to survive.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't understand this crazy goal that you're trying to do.
And I say right we're really conditioned for, you know, lap of luxury.
Yeah.
I mean, how often are we really that uncomfortable?
Oh, exactly. You know, I can sit on my little reclining chair over here with a remote control.
I got air conditioning. I got heat in the winter. You know, even over the pandemic when everybody was feeling the stress, and not that I didn't feel it too, there was times. However, you could call and get food delivered.
Yeah.
How bad do we have it?
Right.
And, you know, we're used to, and the going back to problem solving is, I've talked a lot with coaches and teachers and parents about how to work with the generation, this generation that has grown up on technology. And, you know, I don't know, I never grew up on technology. You know, you didn't either. So I don't understand, you know, where they are with it. I mean, I definitely use it and I like Google. And if I have a question, Google it, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
However, great example of being, but the ability to problem solve is resilience.
Mm. Yeah.
Everything is figure outable. And knowing that even if you don't get what you want in the end and you've done everything right, but you still don't get what you want in the end, I will be okay. Mm. I will be okay. And like our daughter, we have, we're on the Magathie, our neighborhood, and she has a little John boat. And when she got her license and she's, you know, my husband would take her out. And then he said, okay, I want you to go out by yourself. No phone.
Mm, okay.
And I want you to cut off your engine and just act like you're stuck.
That's really good. That's a good stress inoculation.
And that's a planned exposure.
Right. We call it stress inoculation.
But is that what you call it?
Yeah, planned like, exposure. Yeah, same thing. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, exactly. Now figure it out because they're used to just Googling, calling help, you know. And so you get these kids that go away to college and they don't know how to make a decision because they defer to parents or parents have done it for them, whatever the reason. And they're overwhelmed by all the decisions they have to make.
Right.
And you can tell me this, like when they go into special ops and like they're going through FUDs, do they struggle with having no power?
You know, that's a good question. I've never thought of it that way. I mean, you are pretty much, you know, I don't want to say helpless, but you're at the whims of the instructor.
You're at the mercy of,
yeah. And it, I guess, you know, for officers, I can see it sometimes being an issue because one, they're enlisted instructors, you know, that are telling you what to do all the time. Mm-hmm. Two, you're in part of this class, but you have all the responsibility of getting your class from A to B on time with all the right gear. But you have no authority in that class. So there is an issue a little bit, you know, sometimes some of the officers have issues with that. Even the list of guys just being told to be everywhere all the time, it gets on everybody's nerves.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, we're used to having freedom to, you know, make some decisions and it's probably one of the best things in the world to experience also.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
You know, where you're disciplined and you're like, I always say I was talking to a parent, sometimes you gotta make the guardrails really tight.
Yeah.
If you're making a lot of bad decisions, shrink them.
Right.
And you know, and that's kind of like what's happening. Like their decisions, they don't have but a few. And I talked to one friend of mine who was in the Navy, and he said, you know, going on deployment was sometimes nice because he would go out on a ship, and it was so easy. You knew what
to do. Know, a lot of things, you know, all your daily administrative paperwork cut 75%, you know, when you go on deployment. I mean,
he said there weren't I didn't have to navigate home life, work life.
Right.
Just do my job.
Yep. There's a lot of things that you didn't have to juggle.
Right. There was one thing you wanted me to, when they show up, and most of these people doing this, I would think are pretty decent athletes.
Sure.
Certainly by the time you're done with them, they're in really good shape, and they show up and they feel really confident, because they've always been kind of the hot shot. And this happens with D1 or, you know, sports too. In college, they show up and they look around and everyone's as good as them.
Yeah, better.
And they're stripped of their uniform, their jersey or whatever, and they're who they are. They're
sure.
They all look the same.
Yeah.
And they are just one of many.
Just a number. Just a number when you first get there, yeah.
Has always been, you know, this jersey and I'm really good. And so I see this with the freshmen, especially, you know, they're used to being king of the world, never sat the bench ever.
Sure.
You know, played in every single game they ever were at. And when they come in, I ask them all those questions. How many games have you sat the bench? How many did you not start? Not a hand comes up. Because they're all, you know, at Maryland, it's D1.
They're rock star lacrosse.
And I then look at the parents and go, how many games have you seen your child sit the bench or not get to play? And they're like, none. I go, there's going to be a lot of adjusting.
You know, that's a really good point, because that draws a great parallel to going in at 18 years old and going to SEAL training. You know, but you also add in, you're away from home for your first time.
Exactly.
You're in with a new group of people. You're a boy amongst men, you know, at 18 years old compared to 22, 25 year olds that are, you know, going through the training. You're being asked to now perform at levels that you have never performed at before, you know, with, you know, at SEAL training anyway, with a bunch of negative feedback from instructors. Yeah. I'm sure coaching at D1 is probably a little bit of that, but there's also And, you know, and you're asked to meld or get together as, you know, as a class, as a team, you know, real quickly, but you have people quitting all around you every day. So, you know, a friendship that you make today is gone tomorrow. You know, so there's a lot of dynamics going on for that, you know, for anybody, but for the 18-year-old kid who's juggling all of that, I call it the perfect storm for failure.
You're exactly right. And they're not prepared, you know,
right.
To even just recognize, okay, you're used to being the king and you're going to be one of many.
Yeah.
You've got to know who you are. We have like our ultimate reward for a human being is to know that you have whatever you need within yourself, so that you don't need anything from outside yourself. That you know you will do what you need to do and be okay no matter what. I mean, all hell can be breaking loose, but you're going to stay right here, know that you got what you need, and you'll be okay and stay the course.
That's powerful.
And when they get to that point, it changes everything. I saw a young man go from really struggling to, you know, playing the best he's ever played. I mean, he'd never played in his zone to he played in his zone the whole year.
Nice.
And it's just rerouting those wires. I mean, he had the physical. He was, you know, pretty elite athlete. And, you know, it's getting that mind where he felt he was worthy and could produce what he knew he had in him. And so it's so frustrating. People get in their own way and they can't figure out how to get out of their way. I mean, no one shows up and says, I want to be a jerk today. Yeah. No one shows up and says, I want to fail. And yet it happens.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, that's big.
Yeah. Knowing that is the key to happiness and peace. And we have six principles that we have in Brain Savvy that we want to make sure are in alignment. with what you're doing at home, work, everywhere. Humble. That is, you don't, I have everything I need within me. Because if you're humble, you're confident. But you don't need the outside stuff to build you up, to give you value. So humble.
Yeah, humble is very important because it does lead to that confidence. But what it doesn't lead to is the overconfidence and underconfidence.
And that's the middle
which
ground.
Which can really happen to someone who is 18 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Or people who are older too, that maybe just didn't prepare as well. And they don't realize they have to up their game. They have to bring their A game if they're going to stay here, whether that is D1 athletics or it's spec ops training or whatever.
Even higher than that.
Yeah. They have to bring their A game, and their A game has to keep growing. It has to be almost like this exponential curve if you're going to go from 18-year-old high school kid to spec ops guy, or 18-year-old high school kid to D1 starting athlete, not riding the pine.
Right.
You know, that's really and it's the mind is all part of that.
Always both, and that's what's so hard for us.
Yeah.
Is that it's not just one, it's both. And you know, and then we have purpose, which is I'm all in for whatever I have to do.
Yeah.
My purpose is this, and I will do whatever I have to do, and I will not waver.
You know what, there are some 18-year-olders that I think that are finished growing. That's one. So they're out of puberty. And they're able to go to that, and they have that sense of purpose, and they said, hey, whatever I got to do, I got to do. You know,
Will, the guy that had the dog that you did the podcast with, he knew at 18.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not very common, but you know, they just have that ability of like, look, man, I'm going to die doing this. You know, and you know, and this is what I got to do to stay here. You know,
and I think you said this before, not having a plan B.
Yeah, that helps too. You know, I think as you age, you know, there's like this big bell curve of you know, people that make it through SEAL training, and you know, a lot of the 18-year-olds and a lot of the 26, 27-year-olds don't make it through training, but everybody in between from 20 to 24. Tends to make it, you know, so that like those far ends don't tend to make it, statistically speaking, pure statistics. Now there are obviously outliers here and there that are in there, but yeah, not having a plan B is very powerful. You know, if you already have a good job that you just left in the Navy, and you got a wife and kids, and you know, you got to think of them as well. You know, that's a tough one for the older guy to be going through.
I was just watching a 60-minute sports. And they were talking about Bronco riding and how this is such a huge sport, kind of underlying sport in Brazil. It's second to soccer.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, who knew, right?
It's big.
Yeah, it's huge. And the Brazilians want to come, a lot of the Bronco riders for Brazilians come to America because there's more money they can earn. And what they were finding is that the Brazilians were out riding the Americans, and they asked like the number one guy in America, what do you think it is? And he's like, they don't have a plan B. They have dirt floors, they have families, and they have no money, and they need money.
Yeah.
And you know, they have lived very uncomfortably for a long time, and that's, you know, a perfect example.
They're just hard.
Yeah. They get it, what it takes. Cool.
Good deal.
And so, then we have six of the principles, connection. And I was tying this into where you were talking about sometimes you have officers that have no authority, but they need to get their people where they need to do.
Yeah.
And I would think that being able to connect in a meaningful way with those people so that they want to do.
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of easy, to be honest with you, because we're all in this together. You know,
perfect.
Officers enlisted go to the same training. There's really no difference other than the officers just have some roles inside the class that is really more organizational, administrative.
Okay.
that, like I said, they have no authority to do anything other right. than just go from A to B. It does create a good environment to build a team, because it, you know, if you do it right and it's like we versus the instructors,
yeah.
you know, you will get through that together and be stronger together. You know, however, if you start, you know, hitting on your teammates, you know, it's like keep trying to get them to quit. Sometimes that is just a big snowball that makes, and it happens.
Leadership would pop out here.
Yeah. You know, it's
pop out for all of them.
Yeah.
You know, being able to lead in a way that, serves everyone.
Yeah, it's just so hard, because when you have an 80% attrition rate, people are leaving every day mm-hmm. and quitting. You don't even know where people are going. I mean, you're mm-hmm. off to the next evolution and you're five people short than you were when you started that morning. And you're like, what happened? Where'd it go? You know, and you so many people leave around you, you just don't catch up to who it is.
But, a plan exposure with.
Yeah, but the good news is after Hell Week, the attrition really settles.
Stabilizes.
Yeah. And you're now with the team. So first 5 weeks is chaos and pain. And the next 20 weeks, are you going through this training with people that just have some sweat equity in the program now after Hell yeah. Week? That is really the group that gels. The first 5 weeks are just so chaotic that it's hard to gel.
When they say Hell Week, do they mean 5 Hell Weeks?
No. It's a tough 5 weeks, but Hell Week is an actual 120-hour event.
Okay.
That doesn't stop.
Right. So. And so, yeah. So the reptilian brain is going to be like, it's never going to end. You need to leave. And knowing the reptilian brain is always going to tell you it's never going to end.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That,
it's always worried you're not going to be safe.
Yeah.
And then the more you say it will end. And, you know, I think you'll say a lot, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One at a time. Yeah.
Well, eating is a big part of it, because every 6 hours you get to stop what you're doing and eat during Hell Week. So there's a big saying, like, just make it to the next meal.
Yeah.
Make it to the next meal. But I will tell you this, it was funny. When I realized that I got this, right? And it was during Hell Week. It was like day three of Hell Week. And we won this big race. And it was like this 10-hour race, you know, that you just paddle all the way around the island of Coronado. And maybe not 10 hours, but it was a lot. But anyway, we beat the next boat crew by like 2 hours. So our boat crew was digging a hole. And then they put the boat on top of us, and we were all spooned together, all six of us, spooned together, wet, cold, on the beach, sand in every orifice, right? And we were just probably the most comfortable we've ever been. You know, that was when I realized I am now in my cave mode mindset, and I'm this is comfortable. Right.
You felt safe.
Yeah, I was safe. Yeah. And, you know, yeah.
That's a great story. That is like, yeah, you're in your cave.
Yeah. I mean, it was, like I said, it was one of those moments where I realized that, you know, we as a team, we did it. We're making it, you know, it's very possible now. And I realized I detached that thinking part of my brain that was telling me to stop, or maybe the reptilian part of the brain that was telling me to
keep fighting and be safe.
I was able to detach that, and now I'm perfectly fine and comfortable being wet, cold, sandy, you know, and all that. It was a neat moment. So it was
that's cute. That is a really great story.
Yeah,
I think, you know, transferring that to people when they go home after going out,
yeah,
where they can find that cave, you know,
yeah.
And know that they can go there when they need to.
This has been really fun.
I could do it all day. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. There's so much more we can talk about, but thank you so much for doing this. Real quick, how can people find out more about Brain Savvy?
You can go to our website, Brain Savvy with two V's, SAVVY, training.com. I'm on Instagram.
Okay.
We're on Instagram. Brain, I think it's a line, Savvy.
Okay.
Two V's. And Facebook, we're all there right. too. And
I'll put all those links in the yeah. description below.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And thank you so much. We'll yeah. talk again.
This was really all right. good. All right. I will see you around.
Best of luck.
Down. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Yes. Thank Bye. You.